to the Herbal Highway. I'm your host, Karen Sanders. And today we're going to be lucky and talking with Cammie McBride. And Cammie is the founder of the Living Awareness Institute in Davis, California. She is an herbalist, a women's health educator, and an author of numerous books, one of which we're going to talk about today. Welcome, Cammie.
Hello, Karen.
Yeah, you comfortable?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good.
How about you?
I'm very good. I'm waiting for snow. We're getting a storm.
Talking about, you've been doing this show for 15 years.
Yeah, I know. I think about that sometimes. You know, it's like,
time
whoa.
Time has gone by.
You're not kidding. Time has gone by. Cammie, what was, I always think about this, especially this kind of book, because there's so many kind of, I call them very basic, straight herbal books out there. But what was the impetus for writing this type of book and writing this book? I mean, I'm really happy to see it. So I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
It wasn't what I originally thought I was going to write years ago when I had first thought about writing something. But I teach a lot of just like 2-hour classes at junior colleges just to inspire people for the last 25 years. And one of the comments that I heard most often at the beginning of class, I always have people say, you know, just a couple words about if they use herbs or where they're at in their herbal studies. And the most common thing that I heard people say was, I don't really know anything about herbs. I don't really know much about herbal medicine. I only cook with them. And over I heard people say, oh, I love oregano and I love basil and I don't know anything about herbs, but I love to cook with them. And so for me, I'm always looking at how do we transform this culture? How do we change this culture? How do we become more empowered? Mm-hmm. And it was just a thread for me of how if people realized that they were practicing preventive health care and how medicinal those plants were, what an empowering thing that's already in place. And
right.
People could just make that leap so quickly to, oh, wow, okay, I'm cooking a turkey, I'm stuffing it with sage. I already do that because my grandpa did that, but actually I'm doing that not just for flavor, but sage is really good cold and flu. It's really good against colds. And so I wanted to empower people to realize the medicine that they already, that almost everybody already has in their house, in their spice rack.
And, you know, it's just so refreshing because one of the things I love, Cammie, is that you keep herbalism where it's supposed to be, you know, real. It's the medicine of the people. It's preventative medicine as well as, you know, for very serious illness. And I see Western herbalism a lot almost mimicking pharmaceutical stuff with herbs, you know? So it's hard to find just basic, you know what, folks? You are your own herbalist, you know? It's prevention, it's cooking, and it's that. It's doing just that. It's, I think one of the greatest things that herbal medicine provides is prevention. I think that people don't realize that their diet is their health, is their prevention, is their safeguard for getting sick. But a lot of people don't know basic how to eat, you know, what even is healthy. So I'm sure you thought about that when you wrote this. And what's nice about this is you give a materia medica, so you explain pretty much in depth what the herbs are for, and then you go into these fantastic recipes. I mean, was that your intent? Just, okay, maybe you don't know how to cook, so here's some dietary stuff.
Right. Well, you know, I've been seeing clients also for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, in the last couple years, there's a renewed interest in cooking. But prior to that, you know, the herbs that I saw, the clients that I saw 20 years ago knew how to cook more or knew more, had more kitchen skills than the clients I saw 10 years ago.
That's right.
And so I started really, in my classes, I made that, I really started focusing more on cooking 10 years ago because of what I saw in what people needed. And so we started doing a lot more soups and a lot more cooking with herbs. And then all of those recipes just really developed out of what is it that the culture, what is it that people needed. And so the materia medica, the herbs that are focused on in this book are, number one, it's all the cinnamon, cumin, coriander, turmeric, all the paz. And then the other levon are things that are really easy to grow.
Uh-huh.
So just like no-brainer things like fennel and dandelion and oat straw and lemon balm and horseradish and all these that grow in your sleep, and you don't have to do anything practically except get them in the ground or find where they're growing. And so it's also about herbs that are just so easy to grow. It's not even funny. And
right.
How medicinal they are.
And was that kind of your criteria? Because, you know, I mean, cooking spices, we're talking about the world. I mean, it's kind of unlimited what you could have chosen. So did you just do what you said, you know, think about, okay, what's accessible, what's easy for them to throw in the ground? Was that kind of your criteria?
Well, the criteria was things that are already in our cabinet, which come from all over the world. And then also the criteria is, what is our medicine shed? And, you know, there's a lot of plants that can just be brought into each neighborhood that are, you know, a lot of people are like, I don't know how to garden, I don't know how to grow, I don't know, you know. Well, you don't have to be a gardener to grow lemon balm.
No, throw it down.
Right. You don't have to be a gardener to grow horseradish. And so just looking at our medicine shed also from what's really, I wanted to do something that was just so easy to really give people a jumping off point, because I think there's a richness going on right now. There's just such a movement toward the food shed and growing our own food, and the whole gardening movement that's happening is such a, I mean, it's so thrilling.
Yeah.
And there's just one tiny little step to realizing local food, sustainable food, you know, all of that, and saying local medicine, sustainable medicine, what is our food shed? It's all the same thing. And if we can just kind of garner up that slow food, whole food, local food movement, and just put whole food, local medicine, whole medicine, local medicine shed in on that train, I think it's very exciting.
I do too. And I think also it's so refreshing to see just basic. One of the things I think herbalism is supposed to be about, at least from a First Nations perspective, and I think from the original perspectives of every culture, was about self-empowerment, but it was also about you treated yourself. You know, you didn't really go and get help or go to the doctor unless it was really serious, because people knew what to do. You know, they knew how to, like, if your kids were getting sick, You made chicken soup, you made certain foods, and you threw a handful of pine onto the wood stove, you know, in the water. And I think this is kind of hearkening back to that of, look, this is an all-season book. You have to eat. So start with keeping yourself healthy and with these amazing, I mean, I'm looking through this going, oh, I want to make that. Oh, I want to make that. Oh, I'm making that.
Good.
Yeah, you know, and just getting people inspired to understand that herbalism starts and should be in the kitchen. And
to think of your, you know, again, what, I mean, think about it. People that are not herbies or not even foodies or really could care less about herbal medicine have an amazing pharmacy in their cabinet.
That's right.
Like, whose design is that?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. How did that happen that almost every single person living within 100 miles of us or whatever has this amazing pharmacy in their house, and they don't even realize it.
Right.
They don't think of it as a pharmacy. It's like, well, I have mustard seed because my mom used to cook corned beef and cabbage, and once a year I use mustard seed.
Right.
Or I have nutmeg because around the holidays I do eggnog, and we all have this very powerful herbal pharmacy in our kitchen right now. We don't have to go to college. We don't have to take an herb class. It's right there already in front of us.
Yeah. And I think one of the important things, and I, you know, you can speak to this, you know, you have a son. If you start your kids out by having these flavors, by having herbs in their food, by serving them this, they grow up thinking that's part of what should be, and you don't have fights with them about it. You know, people always tell me, oh, how do you get the kids to take the medicine that you treat? And I'm like, I have an easier time with the kids than the adults. You know, I've never had an issue with that. I mean, can you speak to that? Because I think this is part of getting your kids turned on to it, getting them in the kitchen and helping with this.
Well, exactly, because this is where it belongs. I'm sorry, but the whole pharmaceutical onslaught of what we should be doing to take care of our bodies is not going away anytime soon.
Right.
And so what we have to do is know that that's there, and that that's not how we educate ourselves, and that what we do is develop an alternate body of knowledge that flows, a river of knowledge that flows through the culture and flows through each household. And so that when your children are exposed to all that advertisement and media, when they leave your house, they go, oh, I already know what to do for a stomach ache. And
right.
It's not weird. It's not different. It's not woo-woo. It's, you go, I mean, my son is 6 years old. When he has a stomach ache, he goes out in the backyard, he picks his own peppermint, and he makes his own tea.
Yeah.
And he requests, he knows what he wants. He says, Mom, I really need some fennel today. Or he knows what he needs. You know, somebody was going to put some oil on his leg, and he goes, no, actually, I need some lavender oil. So he already knows what he needs, because when he was after, you know, you never feed him sugar. He never gets fruit juice. He just drinks water cut with tea, half water.
Right.
Practically the time he was born. And so he's used to those flavors. He drinks any kind of tea that I put in front of him now, because since he was born, he's been drinking herbal teas. When he was little, it was a third tea, two-thirds water. And then it's, even now, it's sometimes half tea, half water.
Mm-hmm.
But they just develop a scape, a scentscape and a flavorscape. And because, number one, he's not eating sugar or fruit juice. And the herbs are just normal. They're just part of who he is, because that's how it all started out.
Well, and also I think it's also just what you spoke to, empowering someone. This kid has a power to know that he can make himself feel better. You know, it's not out of his grasp. It's not something you have to do. It's like right there, try this. If that doesn't work, ask for something else. And I think that's the power of herbalism. That's a power of a book like this, with all these recipes, is you are taking back your health. It isn't outside there. It's not a pharmaceutical. There is not a pharmaceutical on the market, by the way, folks, that does not have a side effect that is worse than the pharmaceutical. And we didn't grow up, you and I, with TV much to begin with, but TV, where you were onslaughted, they didn't allow medicine, you know, pharmaceutical commercials on TV then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you just didn't see it. So basically, is every herb that you use in the Materia Medica?
That I use personally?
No, that you used in the book.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first part of the book is really nice, because it's set up so it explains the herb, how to grow it, which I love, you know, gardening tips, which is, like, crucial. But then it explains pretty much, not in depth, but not taking up a lot of space, what these herbs are and what the vitamins they have for you. And then it goes into recipes, which are phenomenal. You've broken them into recipes. How did you come up with that? I mean, you've got, how many recipes are in here? 250?
Or 250. Okay, well, the Herbal Kitchen is, you know, I've been teaching a year long. I've been teaching for 20, whatever. You've been teaching longer than I have, but a long time. And so it's just, as you know, you think you're in control of the class, or you think you know what you're going to teach.
Yeah, right.
And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, we're not doing that. We're doing this. Because
yeah.
It's not just you. It's the people in the class, and then it's the plants themselves.
That show up.
And pretty soon, what you start mixing together, you go, oh, wow. And the plants guide you, and they, you know, if you develop your awareness of them, and then you start having a feel for what they can do, and then pretty soon the recipes just start flowing. And so these recipes were all created over the last 20 years, you know, in class.
Right.
What do people need? Oh, everybody's got a sinus infection. Okay, well, what do you have in your cabinet? You know, I just go over to someone's house and like, oh, I'm sick. Well, I don't have anything. Well, let's go in your, look at your spice cabinet. Oh my goodness, you've got cinnamon, ginger, and clove. Wow. Okay, let's make a tea with that.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, there goes your sinus starts draining and it's gone the next day. So
right.
It's already there. And one of the best things that just came, I don't know where it came from, but that I love to just turn people onto is to get a lazy Susan. You know, just a small, lazy
uh-huh.
Susan, and put it in the middle of your kitchen table and to go beyond salt and pepper.
Thank you.
Salt and pepper are really good, but, you know, you can get like I have like 10 salt shakers in the middle of my table, and so you have cinnamon. I put cinnamon and ginger and fennel and turmeric, and so all that stuff is not in the cabinet. It's on the table. And when you have children around, they cannot resist.
And, especially the colors. Stickers.
Oh, my gosh. And then I have these little bowls with spoons. And pretty soon they're going, oh, well, what can I put on this? And what can I put on that? And now all the kids that are in our life, they've had to buy those little bowls. And they all have lazy Susans. Sit down without garnishing. You know, paprika goes on our corn and cinnamon goes on the oatmeal. You use them so much more if they're on the table. And now
it's true.
All the children are like, oh, what can I garnish my food with? It's such a great way to have your children really understand what herbs go with what and allow them the access to them so that they start doing themselves.
And also, I think it's the color, the visuals are stunning. And you don't have to go, no, don't put, with salt, you're like, hey, whoa, what are you doing? Don't do that. You know, when you have herbs out there, you're like, yeah, pour more on. That's great.
They figure it out that the turmeric doesn't really go on the oatmeal. Like, it only takes once and they figure it out.
Right.
I don't tell them. I let them do whatever. And then they figure it out.
Yeah. And also, I think what's great is it's a way for Americans to get past the only dominant flavors that they love are sweet and salt. And it turns kids on to what your body needs, which is savory, which is bitter, which is crucial for your digestion, And your digestion is crucial for your health, overall health. So it's a way to get not just kids, but everyone at the table turned on to flavors. Sour, like you talked about, I grew up with, we had sumac. Mm-hmm. It was just a very big plant that we use. And so sumac berries were used a lot, which is, if you've ever had them, it's sour with kind of a underlying savory tart. With a kind of bitter, it's an interesting mix.
Like tart.
Yeah.
Tart.
And kids love sour. Most kids, when they're a certain age, like sour. So it's a great way to get them to not just have lemon,
That's true. And the young children love sour. Lots of young children. And I'm focusing a lot on children because I just think the food and the drinks. I have a whole section on drinks.
Boxes
and start making hot lavender lemonade and just turn off the TV. No television for children under 9 years old, period. And then, start teaching them how to make their own drinks. And garnishing their own food. And then pretty soon everything changes because that's just what they expect.
Yeah. And kids love to cook. I used to have a job where I drove the school bus, brought the kids to school. It was like, I think it was a 5 down to 2. And then my other job was, this was back in the Carter days when there was money available for public services. I was the cook and we served them a full breakfast and a full lunch. So it was organic gourmet cooking, basically, for these kids. And I would go around and go to all the rooms and say, who wants to help cook today? And sometimes we'd have 20 kids in there, sometimes we'd have 5. And I was teaching them how to cook, but I was also using a lot of herbs and a lot of these like organic, strange foods that they'd never seen. And I realized it just starts so young, if you can just get them to understand that they know how to do this, that they can make themselves feel good, they can make themselves healthy. And kids will turn their parents on, because I would have some of the parents sometimes go, what did you serve? Because my kid's talking about it. And I think you've probably seen this with your son, has got to have influenced his friends.
Yeah.
Or, if they come to your house.
Yeah, like I said, his friends, his two of his best friends now have Lazy Susans with paprika. We have little bowls of paprika, and they put paprika on everything.
Uh-huh.
We go through so much paprika, I can't believe it.
Well, being half Hungarian, it's the food of the gods. It should be out there. Especially if you get good quality paprika, where it has some...
Like you said, just really getting them involved. I think one of the things is that I talk about in the first chapter is, I call it culinary culture, and just coming back to having some culinary culture in our household. And so many of us are busy and we don't have time, and thinking, well, all of a sudden everybody's carved out a half hour a day for Facebook, or overnight everybody carved out a half hour a day for emails, or we do have time, but I have to schedule it. And so we actually have 2 hours a week on Thursday, actually today, this afternoon, that's like our kitchen time. I mean, we cook other times, but it's like Tuesdays we for sure have gardening time, and Mm-hmm. And so there's a day, there's a, you know, at least a half an hour or an hour or sometimes 2 hours where we know we're going to be straining things out or putting things up or making some pesto or dealing with, you know, cracking walnuts, something that right. is like a rhythm around food. It's like, oh, this day we always do stuff around food.
Right. And I think
and
also,
back in.
Yeah, and tea, you have a really nice section in here of, like you said, drinks and teas being one of them, and lemonades and things like that. And I can't tell you the importance for those of you listening. Oh, I should say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Herbal Highway. I'm your host, Karen Sanders, and we're talking with Cami McBride. She has a new book out, The Herbal Kitchen, which is fantastic. It basically has a materia medica of 50 herbs and then 250 really good recipes. I think tea is crucial. I think people need to go back to, I used to only give teas, you know, dry people. And I started wasting medicine and turned to tincture because people just refused to take them, take the time. But part of healing is slowing down. And part of getting better and getting back to balance is realizing that you're sick because of your lifestyle. And just the act of making a cup of tea, waiting for it to brew, and then sitting down and having it is a huge part of the healing process and a huge part of kind of realizing that you have to slow down in order to get better. You can't just pop a pill and keep doing what you're doing. And I think this is kind of, this herbal cookbook really is a way to mix the two of, I have to eat every day and I can figure out how to empower myself. I mean, you had to have that in mind of just, how do we get people back to slowing down? Cami, what do you think if someone's going, well, how do I, where do I start? You know, what would you say to somebody like, okay, I'm not really a cook. I don't really know. Where do I start?
Well, one thing that I know is true is that for me, cooking alone is not very much fun. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm cooking with someone else, it's like a party.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we really, it's a very new thing in the history of ourselves that, that we cook and prepare food and medicine alone. It's a new thing.
Yeah.
And we've always prepared food and medicine in groups. And once, you know, once I'm in the kitchen with one or two other women, it's like a healing. It's a healing. You know, we yeah. solve each other's problems. We create yeah. new things. It's a creative healing process. And so one of the first places to start is to get with somebody that knows, or get with somebody that knows one thing, or get three or four together and start and just learn one thing, like how to work with a crock pot, how to make, you know, or co-op, like, okay, let's get together for one day and make five, you know, five days worth of meals and freeze them. Something that involves other people in community. For many years, I had two neighbors, and I cooked Monday night, she cooked Tuesday night, and the other one cooked Wednesday night. And the food
oh,
was already
that's sweet.
At 4 o'clock, so if somebody had soccer or somebody had this or that, it was just ready. With all the to-go containers, you could come up. You didn't even have to talk to anybody if you didn't want to. If you were sick or whatever, you know, you could just come get your food and go. And so every Monday night, I was really inspired to do something well and good. And then I wasn't burnt out because I wasn't cooking Tuesday or Wednesday night. And so we ate really well. And so the first step is to get involved with someone else, either through a class or someone that you know, and start creating community around food and cooking and preparing meals together. Because part of the reason why we all need adrenal tonics is because we're all cooking all our meals ourselves every day.
Right.
And we're not meant to do that. So you start by learning how to use a crock pot, learning how to make rice, learning right. one or two things, and doing it with someone else and working together and talking about it and doing it in community.
I totally agree. I mean, one of the things I've always known is, excuse me, make the kitchen the best place in the house because that's where everybody hangs out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's where you go to any party and you go to the kitchen and that's where everybody kind of gravitates to, you know, or if you just go over to your friends. And I do agree, cooking with people and also learning how to cook, you know, like, enough that you could have it for two or three days, you know, stews, rices, soups, things that not only get better with time, but you can just keep adding herbs to them, you know, the more you simmer them. And so you don't have to start with, oh, it's got to be fancy gourmet 8-course.
Right.
you know, which, you know, is nice, but every day you're not going to be doing that. This is the Herbal Highway. I'm your host, Karen Sanders, and I'm talking today with Cami McBride, who is talking about her new book, The Herbal Kitchen, I'm just going to call it a great herbal cookbook, because that's what we have, and that's what I have in my hand, and you can have in your hand, with all these recipes and explanations and a great materia medica of, okay, here's what the herbs do, so you can figure out what to make for yourself. Cami,
yes.
Let's have some recipes from you, because I know I'm teasing people, because there are some... I really went through this going, oh, I'm going to make this. I'm going to make that. And
yeah.
You have some favorites in here?
I actually do.
Okay.
So one reason to just own the Herbal Kitchen is for the chai recipe.
Oh, uh-huh.
I have a whole section on how to make herbal honeys.
Uh-huh.
Herbs in your honey and use it in your cooking and your drinking. Most of the chai that's on the market is just full of sugar. You know, I mean,
yeah,
not
it's
all
really
of it.
Bad.
Good, but you can make a whole quart of honey, a big jar of it filled with herbs, and then just put like a teaspoon in a cup or two of boiling water and make your own homemade chai. And it's so cost-effective, and it's so delicious.
Yeah.
Then you put some steamed milk in there, and it's like the $4 cup at whatever cafe. And
yeah,
you can
right.
carry that honey with you. You can carry it with you, your chai honey, and then just put a teaspoon in a cup and have your own instant chai. And a lot of the recipes, so it's broken up into herbal honeys, herbal oils, herbal vinegar, herbal ghee. So the recipes are laid out so that what you do is you make up a half a dozen herbal oils, you make up three or four herbal ghees. So I have a cabinet that has like three Lazy Susans in it, and I have, you know, herbal ghees, herbal oils, herbal vinegars, and then your cooking just takes on whole, you know, you're baking a chicken or you're steaming some vegetables or you're doing a bunch of root vegetables, and then you just put a dollop of this herbal ghee in and a dollop in some of that herbal oil. And the problem is sometimes you have to remember what you did in case you really like it.
Yeah, which is, yeah, I don't cook like that. I'm always like, oh.
But if the idea is to have a lot of condiments around, things that are already prepared.
And easy to use.
And are filled with medicinal, healing, therapeutic, beneficial herbs, and they just go in your food. They can either go in your food if you're cooking them, they can be put into smoothies and raw foods if you're doing that, or they can be put onto food after it's already prepared. And so maybe you're uninspired or you're tired or you don't have time to make something fresh and delicious, you can just steam some vegetables and put on a delicious herb ghee, and it's like this gourmet flair of, you know, it just adds so much flavor.
So let's hear what's in the chai.
There's powdered cinnamon, coriander, clove. Do you want me to lay it out, like which teaspoon of this and which teaspoon of that? Or
if you feel like it, yeah.
Yeah. So it's 2 cups of honey and 3 tablespoons of powdered cinnamon, 2 tablespoons of powdered coriander, 1.5 teaspoons of powdered clove, 1.5 teaspoons of powdered cardamom, 1 teaspoon of powdered ginger, 1 teaspoon of powdered black pepper. And then you just stir that up and set it in the cabinet and let it sit for a couple of days so everything kind of mixes together. And then it's, you know, it lasts for a year.
Yeah.
Or more. But you
drink it up. Honey's a preservative, which I don't think a lot of people realize. That's the one thing I do love about this book is you have stuff in here that's like, here's how to make stuff that's sitting there waiting for you so that you can come in and just throw something together and throw this in and have an amazing herbal, delicious meal and not have to constantly start from scratch. And give us some more recipes. Give us some of your drink recipes, because that's what I was looking at. I'm like, ooh.
Okay, I'll give you some grease, but the other thing I really love is I write out how to make ghee, and then ghee is also another completely stable medium.
Right.
You know, that people that are lactose intolerant can use, and it's really good for you. It's good for your brain, and you can just have it on the counter and have herbs in it, and it just really adds a lot to your food. So just very simple things, like I have a morning ghee.
And I'm just going to say, for those that don't know, ghee is butter that you through a process of slow cooking, you pull out the solids, you pull out the water and the fats, basically, the milk solids. And so you have almost like an oil, a butter-flavored oil that lasts for a year on, if you don't use fresh herbs, it will last for a year on your thing. So go ahead, Cammie, give us a recipe.
Yeah, so I put 1 cup of ghee and then 3 tablespoons of powdered cinnamon and 1 teaspoon of powdered allspice and half a teaspoon of powdered clove. And then I mix that in really well and just let it sit. And then that can really go on most of kind of standard American breakfast foods. If you're doing like waffles or pancakes or oatmeal or, you know, any kind of warm grain cereal or anything like that, you can put that ghee on that breakfast food, and it's, first of all, it's so delicious.
Yeah.
And then you really don't need the syrup and all of the rest of the sugar stuff, because the herbs just really bring out the sweetness in the grain.
Right.
And the other thing is that these herbs are for flavor, but they're also the bridge to you being able to digest those grains and to digest different foods. I mean, the grains also need to be well soaked and prepared well, but we like to think of our spice cabinet mainly for flavor, but we also want to start thinking about that all those spices that we have, like in the morning ghee and all the spices that are covered in the herbal kitchen, we really need those spices. They're not just for flavor. They are the bridge to us being able to assimilate the nutrients in our food.
Right, and the digestion ghee, which is fennel, coriander, and black pepper, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's to get your body to start digesting what you just put into it.
You put that in your morning food or a heavy meal, and it allows you to assimilate the nutrients in your food. And, you know, especially in the morning, a lot of people, their digestive fire isn't really up to par. And so we really need these herbs, the cinnamon and the coriander and the allspice, to help us digest the nutrients. And, you know, there's a saying, like, around this time of year, you know, eat, drink, and be merry.
Yeah.
A lot of people get sick because they're eating and they're bloated and they're not digesting.
Yeah.
And being merry after eating means that you have to digest your food well, or you are definitely not merry.
Right.
And
right.
Without the spices, it's just the spices in the food that have us digesting the food. And so to just start really looking at your spice cabinet as what's going to be what it enables you to digest your food. They are all carminative. They all help you to digest your food. So it's also a cold and flu book and a holiday drink book. Things like the ginger cold buster tea and the immune juice tea and incredible recipes for mulled cider and spiced wine and holiday drinks. It's, you can save so much money by serving homemade drinks to your guests or for your gatherings, and keep everybody healed and healthy. And so it's also, there's lots of good drinks for the cold and flu season and for the holidays. So
Cammie, what should I be doing to I've got the start of a little sore throat, and I definitely do not want what's been going around here.
Okay,
what should I do now?
Okay, well, really simple. You probably don't even have to go to the store. You can go to your cabinet, and you've got some great spices probably already in your home that you could use right now. And I have a recipe called Ginger Cold Buster, and you make a cup of tea with that powdered ginger that you used last year in your pumpkin pie or whatever. And you make a cup of ginger tea, and you put some cinnamon. So you do cinnamon and ginger tea just straight out of your spice cabinet. So you do 2 cups of water, and you put in half a teaspoon of cinnamon and half a teaspoon of ginger, and just let that simmer for a little bit and strain it out, put a little honey in it, and just start chasing away that cold right this minute.
Right, and on, and I can do that. I've got those both in my cabinet,
you
of course.
Do, don't you?
And if you want to brave yourself up a little, you chop in some raw garlic and throw it in at the end.
There you go.
Gee, raw garlic and honey.
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
It's really good.
All right.
Many people listening could just do that and just benefit so much from that. And it's like you were saying, Chris, it's just the simple everyday wisdom that you, every week that you listen to on this show, that just empowers our lives and fills our homes. And that's where this belongs, is in the home.
Amen. Yeah. I should say, and Karen has this wisdom because she has studied it. She was first trained by her grandmother, who is a Choctaw Indian, and she studied with the Curandera. She's trained with other traditional herbalists, and she does this as a professional. But you don't have to have done all that to benefit from herbs. She just happens to be somebody who will know a great deal of specifics about what exactly is good for what, as she tells us every single week. She's got something going on.
Cammie, could you give out a pesto recipe, especially one of the more different ones that are just really, oh, this flour pesto. Could you give that recipe out?
See, that's what happens when I get a cookbook. It's just like, oh, man.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you can eat pesto all year long. The basil's all gone, but there's lots of other things you can make pesto with.
That's right.
You know, again, the Herbal Kitchen, it is a great gift for anybody who loves to cook, anybody who's wanting to learn to cook, anybody who's interested in herbs, anybody that has a spice cabinet could benefit from these recipes. And so what I like to do this time of year is, if you make pesto with basil, just, you know, you don't have the basil anymore, so substitute it for arugula. The arugula is just coming up crazy in everybody's garden. I mean, the arugula is, you know, 6 feet high, six inches high in my garden, and you just put in arugula instead. And so I have a delicious arugula sage pesto, which you instead of basil, you put 3/4 cup of olive oil, 2.5 cups of arugula, and then you put some parsley. Parsley is also really abundant right now. 1/2 cup of parsley, and then 1/4 cup of sage from the garden, and then you put in your garlic cloves. And you don't have to use pine nuts. You can use sunflower seeds or pumpkin seeds, other seeds, and it's delicious. And there's lots there for hors d'oeuvres for all the holiday parties coming up.
Yeah, that would be really good with
healthy.
That would be really good with hazelnuts in it.
Mm. Oh,
yeah.
Well, there she goes.
I know.
I am getting hungry.
I know. I'm telling you, I'm looking at this book going, oh, man, I got to go make some lunch or something. But Chris Welch, what do we have in here? 30 years you've been? Has it been about 30 years?
Oh, now the children in the audience, cover your ears. I started on The Morning Show in 1974.
Before
that, I was a volunteer. I was in the Women's News Collective.
Yeah.
So I was a volunteer for 2 years.
Yeah. They pull her up for me before I come on the air every Thursday. And I have to say, Chris, when I listen to your show, I'm furiously writing, trying to get information down before my show. And it's hard because I'm like trying to like zone myself into the show. And I'm like listening to you writing down all the stuff you have on the show. And
I don't know, for some reason, maybe, especially in the winter, maybe, although I do it other times too, but especially in times of stress, somehow I start looking at recipes.
Yeah.
And I've started collecting all of these recipes out of the newspaper. They're piling up. I haven't made any of them yet.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take a week off between Christmas and New Year's, and my plan is to just do a whole lot of cooking and then invite a whole lot of people over to eat.
Because what a great idea.
Yeah.
So, Cammie, give her a recipe. Give her one of your favorite recipes that she can serve up.
Okay, well, one of the things, you know, it seems like sometimes we go to holiday parties and we just revert to like chips and dip or something. Anybody do that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of recipes in here that are healthy hors d'oeuvres, delicious healthy hors d'oeuvres. And so I make this ginger fig honey.
Ooh.
And it's 1 cup of honey, and then you put 1.5 cups of finely chopped dried figs, and then 3/4 teaspoon of powdered, you know, dried ginger, and 1/4 teaspoon of powdered star anise, and 1/4 teaspoon of powdered nutmeg, all from your spice cabinet, and you mix it all together. And then you put that on, you know, cream cheese and crackers or crackers or whatever, and it is so delicious.
Oh, yeah, and you can also put that on. You make take sourdough bread and make toast.
Right, yes.
And then spread some good blue cheese on there and put honey on there.
Oh, my God.
There you go, Chris.
Oh, this is specifics are what really get me going.
I know.
And the salivation is, oh, boy.
So
the other thing is that not only is this going to be absolutely delicious, and my mouth is watering, I can't talk. It's good for you. Good and good for you, as my mother used to say.
Oh, you're not kidding. Cami, how do people get a hold of you before I get you off the air if they want to? Yeah.
My website is livingawareness.com. That's www.livingawareness.com. And that's the best way. You can email me, or I have my books and classes available through my website.
Chris Welsh, thank you so much. Eddie Pay, Cami McBride. Anything else you want to say, Chris? I cut you off.
No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Didn't cut me off at all. And okay. Those of you who are...